This episode of Movie Rollers is brought to you by the letter H. We're going to review Hitchcock, The Hobbit, and Hyde Park on Hudson. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Glad tidings from a Sunday morning.
Yes, indeed.
And we're all together again. I love it when we're together.
We do have to apologise to our listeners because we've kind of been on an unimposed hiatus by just the release dates of all the films that come out at the end of the year. It's been so weird. We've seen so much stuff that we haven't been able to talk about and record. So that's why it's been at least a couple of weeks since our last show was pushed out.
Yeah, and we must have seen
hundreds.
Well, yeah. It's not like we haven't
20s,
been watching movies.
20s, 30s.
Yeah, we've been watching movies nonstop for the last couple of weeks.
Seriously.
Just to catch them all up before the end of the year.
I'm genuinely square-eyed.
I was going to say, as Yazdi always says, it's an embarrassment of riches. I've watched a film, if not every day, two a day.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for.
I know.
You just might get it. You know, I was like, I wish I could spend all my time watching movies. And literally, there's more movies than I can watch.
I've been spending all my time watching movies.
Yeah.
It's like that movie. You remember that movie, Brewster's Millions?
Yes.
Where he's, and especially at the beginning of the movie, there's that little anecdote he talks about when his father caught him smoking. And he locked him in the broom closet and said, you can't come out until you smoked all these cigarettes. Yeah. And it was his lesson for life. It was like, ugh, that was disgusting. I'm never going to smoke again.
You know, I love that film and I never remember that scene, Joe.
It's an anecdote. It's kind of what he... And that's the reason that he gets the 30 million to spend in 30 days. But I feel like we've got all these movies to watch. And it's been fun. I mean, it's not put me off movies, don't get me wrong. But it's just been like such a lot of fun and work.
It's great. It's a great place to be.
Yeah. I'm not complaining, by the way.
Yeah.
Even though it might sound like that. So we have three movies to review today. Which one would you like to start with? Hitchcock?
Oh, I thought we were going to make it a mystery and just start one.
Oh.
And that was going to be our segue.
Into Hitchcock.
All right, so let's start with Hitchcock then. Rashmi, you're going to intro that for us?
I am. So Hitchcock is a love story of sorts about one of the most influential filmmakers of the last century, Alfred Hitchcock, and his wife and partner, Alma Revel. The film takes place during the making of Hitchcock's seminal movie, Psycho. This is directed by Sacha Gervaisi and written by John McLaughlin and Stephen Rebello, and stars Anthony Hopkins, Helen Mirren, Scarlett Johansson, Toni Collette, and Danny Hudson, and an appearance by Jessica Biel. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first? And I know you saw this one quite a while ago.
Yeah, I saw it at the original screening a couple of weeks ago. I thought this was a fun film, very engaging as you're watching it. But my only complaint about it is that for having been based on the one director in film history known for plumbing so much psychosexual undercurrents in all of his films, I found this movie oddly toothless. A little too tame for me.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah, I agree with that assessment, Yazdi. My main problem with the movie, and it's not necessarily anyone's fault other than my own, it was Anthony Hopkins' portrayal of Hitchcock, which I felt was very caricature-like. But I think Hitchcock's persona was so much so that he was that caricature. I mean, we always see the Hitchcock intros to the shows that he used to do in the movies. But he was really like that. And just seeing Anthony Hopkins kind of bumble around doing that was really off-putting, because I just thought he was doing an Hitchcock impression rather than a Hitchcock portrayal. So I couldn't buy into the movie. Overall, it was, kind of a semi-engaging movie, but not one that I'm in love with.
Yeah, I didn't actually know much about Hitchcock before I watched this movie, and I haven't watched a ton of Hitchcock movies, actually. So I felt actually educated and entertained by this one. I actually enjoyed the movie quite a lot, although, like you guys have said, it felt a little bit tongue-in-cheek at times, and I absolutely agree with you, Joe. It felt like Anthony Hopkins was doing a caricature. It almost felt like we were watching a cartoon of Hitchcock in a sense. But that didn't really take away from my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah, I think the level of difficulty here, what comes to mind is similar to what Meryl Streep had to do when she played Julia Child. I think This is a character which is so odd and so exaggerated in real life.
Yeah, good
that
point.
To do a good job is very difficult. And I think Anthony Hopkins is so overpowered by the physicality of it. I mean, they've done so much makeup and he looks physically so much like that rotten presence, but it still seems like an incomplete transformation to me. I mean, I don't know if it was a cultivated thing, but if you look at those old black and white, clips of Hitchcock from when he did the intros, Alfred Hitchcock Presents of the Twilight Zone, he had this very sinister, detached, you know, way, and there was a tilt, lilt to how he was talking. And I didn't find anything sinister about how Anthony Hopkins portrayed him. He just seemed kind of bumbling and just silly at times.
So I think he was weighed down by all the makeup. I think that's a great point, Yazdi, because it was almost hard to recognize Anthony Hopkins in that role. And I think one of the things we love about Anthony Hopkins is that he's such an incredible actor. And so it's strange that when you put a mask, almost like a brown bag on that actor's head, it kind of changes your perception of their acting ability.
But I don't blame him for any of it.
No,
I
mean, absolutely not.
That's the thing. I don't think it was a bad job. I think he did an excellent job of portraying this very unusual and very stylized persona of a man. It was just, it was hard to buy into.
Yeah.
That was my problem.
But
anyway.
having said that, I think the thing for me that I enjoyed the most, which is why I was really entertained, I really liked the look behind the Psycho set. I have watched Psycho. That's one of the ones I have watched. And I love the way that the film itself almost played like a bit of a horror. So that I found very interesting. But I think it fell down because it doesn't really have much heft in terms of the grand scheme of things. It didn't have a big picture. And so there wasn't really much to hang on to through the film.
Yeah, I mean, in structure, and actually how the architecture of the movie is very similar to the movie last year, My Week with Marilyn, which also followed Marilyn during...
I didn't see that one.
Absolutely.
While she was making a movie. And I think, it's a very odd choice to make this movie about the time when Hitchcock was making Psycho, because I don't think the movie tells you that much. I mean, there are iconic scenes in that movie in Psycho. I mean, there must be 10 iconic scenes which every film lover knows and gets. And I wanted to know more about them. I wanted to know what happened behind the filming of those scenes. And save for the shower scene, you really don't find out anything much more. And I don't know if it's because the movie was restricted by a PG-13 rating, or I don't know if they just didn't have the copyright for the original Psycho movie that they could actually show anything in this movie. So it kind of came across as somewhat shallow.
Half-baked.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this might be a little too much inside baseball, but a friend of mine, well, one of my co-workers, Jessica, went to a preview screening of this movie back in August. It was before they had made the final cut. And one of the things, it was one of these screenings where they try and poll the audience. It was kind of a screen test. Mm-hmm. And she gave me some insight as to what they were looking for, because they were really having a hard time as to how to pitch this movie. They ended up being asked a lot of questions about, do you think of this as more of an art house movie? Do you think of more of this as a mainstream movie? Mm. How did the movie make you feel? All that kind of stuff. But it really struck me as a movie that they were having a hard time as to how they would market it and understanding really what they had. Because they were going to look into recutting it.
Yeah.
Just because the tone of the movie was so odd. I mean, it didn't feel playful. It didn't feel serious.
It kind of got stuck somewhere in the middle. I mean, it felt almost, like I said, tongue-in-cheek, but then there were some serious parts when they were trying to delve into some of the kind of more stranger aspects of Alfred Hitchcock's personality. I think the other thing is that, like Yazdi said, I think these films provide an interesting vehicle for these actors. So, like with My Week with Marilyn, when, Michelle Williams got nominated for a number of awards as Marilyn, but the film didn't really gain any traction. I kind of feel this is going to be the same thing with, great actor like Helen Mirren and Anthony Hopkins.
I'm curious to know whether the film from the very start was meant to be this love story about him and his wife, or if it was recut to have that be the backbone of the movie.
Mm.
And I don't know enough about Alma Ravel, his real life wife, to know how much of it is real and how much of it was made up for the purpose of the movie. But Helen Mirren is terrific here.
She's always great.
Yeah, but this is a very difficult role,
yes.
You know, because she's sort of proto-feminist in a time when feminism wasn't big, and she doesn't overplay it, and she's kind of pulling the strings from behind, and yet, you know, she doesn't really, theirs isn't a great love story. They're not desperately in love with each other. It's a difficult portrayal.
Yeah.
I thought
she did a great job. And I was actually stunned by even Scarlett Johansson, who I don't necessarily love. I always enjoy her performance.
Sorry. I'm laughing here because the cat has sat on Yazdi's notes.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's
obviously
right.
Your writings make a great cat bed there, Yazdi.
That's what she thinks about it. It's litter. It's crap. I'm going to sit on it.
But I mean, Scarlett Johansson was great in this, and even Jessica Biel, I thought, mm-hmm. was really good, because
that's right,
these
yeah.
are very subtle characteristics which these women have to play. You know, they have to be the femme fatales in some way, but you know, there's a way to play it without it being too overtly sexual, especially in a PG movie. And I thought they did it brilliantly in this. So that's one thing I really enjoyed about the movie.
All right, should we summarize this one? Who wants to go, Rashmi?
Sure. I think this is great entertainment for a rainy day or when you've run out of everything else to see. This isn't a rush out and see, but I think it's a good movie if you've got nothing else to do. I'll probably give this one a 6 out of 10.
Yazdi.
Yeah, for a movie titled Hitchcock, you don't really come off knowing much about what made Hitchcock tick, and I think that's my major peeve about the movie. Yeah, I mean, the usual stuff that everybody knows, that, you know, he had a thing for all the leading blonde ladies in his movies, and he had an affinity for the darker shades of human behavior. But I really didn't get to understand or know Hitchcock as a person more from having seen this movie. I thought the movie has a great beginning. I love the opening scene in the movie, and I also loved how it ends. It's, you know, what was in between that I wish the movie had delved a little bit deeper and gone darker. And so, for the superficial treatment, I give it a 6.5 out of 10, and I'm going to back it up to 6 as well.
Yeah, same here. I enjoyed the movie. I don't think this was a bad movie. I just, you know, it screams of missed opportunities, and, you know, is ultimately a little disappointing in that regard. But, you know, if you need to while away a couple of hours on a plane, definitely see this one. And certainly when it comes out on HBO, you know, like, record it and watch it mm-hmm. as quickly as you can, because it's worthy. All right, shall we...
The score.
Oh, did I not give a score?
No.
Do you need my score?
Yes.
6 out of 10.
Okay. Mm,
interesting.
Unanimous sixes.
3 sixes.
Oh, evil movie.
Hitchcock.
That was a Twilight Zone moment.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move off into...
Another Twilight Zone moment.
Mordor. Should we go to The Hobbit?
Yes. Sure.
Right.
Let's go from past Earth to Middle Earth.
So, Yazdi, can you intro The Hobbit?
I can. More than a decade after the release of the first Lord of the Rings film, director Peter Jackson is back again with The Hobbit. Also based on a book by J.R.R. Tolkien, The Hobbit, or There and Back Again, which is the name of the original book, tells the story of home-loving hobbit Bilbo Baggins, who searches for a treasure guarded by the dragon Smaug. A prequel of sorts to the Lord of the Rings story, we revisit Middle-earth, where Baggins teams with a group of dwarves to take the unexpected journey from the title of the movie to Lonely Mountain to bring back their stolen treasure from the snares of a dragon. The film was written by Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, Guillermo del Toro, and Peter Jackson, and stars the familiar Sir Ian McKellen as Gandalf, Martin Freeman as Bilbo Baggins, and many, many others. This is the first in an intended trilogy. I haven't seen the movie, but I know both of you have, so go at it. Rush me.
So an unexpected journey is an unexpected disappointment that undoes all the great work that Lord of the Rings trilogy did. This was a dull, boring film that I just wasn't able to connect with and should have been called Bored of the Rings.
Ouch. Ouch. Well, I mean, there's something I do want to talk about. Well, let's do our review first, because this movie has a new technology, the HFR 3D, mm-hmm. 48 frames per second stuff. But the movie itself, I mean, like you, Rashmi, I agree that lacked a lot of the grandeur of Lord of the Rings, but I think the overall tone of the movie was a lot more playful and less somber. And I think that was deliberate because the book itself is one that I read as a child. I think I actually had it read to me. There was a UK show called Jack and Ori where they used to actually just dictate books with illustrations. Mm. And that's how I know the Hobbit story. Mm. I can't remember if I actually read the book. I know I have a copy of it somewhere, but nonetheless, the overall theme of this is a lot less dark than Lord of the Rings. So they incorporated some of that into it. I agree with you, Rashmi. The real problem I think that this whole trilogy is going to have until the finale is that The Hobbit is a relatively short book. It's a couple hundred pages, and to make it into a 3x3-hour epic trilogy, you end up having to slow things down. Now, I didn't find the movie necessarily boring. It's just there were some very long scenes where not much happened. It was all very entertaining in the moment. There was lots of action, things happening, and, you know, like the dwarves dining in Bilbo Baggins' residence at the beginning of the movie. But that scene goes on for a good half hour. And so there's not a lot of story happening. There's just lots of stuff that's happening on screen to keep you entertained. And so that, I think, is really the problem that the whole trilogy is going to have unless he really cranks up the pacing of it and introduces new elements in part two and three.
So what's the problem here? Should I just say it? Is it greed?
I mean, there are two major problems for me, Yazdi. One was exactly what Joe said. It really feels like Peter Jackson has just elongated the story to make it as long as possible. And in my mind, those scenes just went on way too long. It's just not necessarily necessary. The other problem I had, and this is the bigger problem, I was so distracted by the crazy costumes of Elfworld. And for me, it felt like Fraggle Rock on a bad trip. It was so distracting for me to see such bizarre people dressed up in costume. It was like Halloween gone on crack.
No, but that is the world of Middle Earth. I mean,
right, but that wasn't the Middle Earth that we saw in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
That.
It wasn't as crazy. This was like a bad acid trip. I mean, it was just so distracting. It couldn't keep me in the moment. And then the bigger problem, the overall problem, was the frames per second, which I know you're dying to speak about.
Let's talk about that at the end, because I think that warrants its own discussion.
So that, I think for me, those three things just killed the movie for me. It was way too long. I was like, when is this going to end? Take me away from Middle Earth and drop me back to my Earth.
Well, just to answer Yasti's question, it is greed. I think, you know, they wanted another trilogy. I think they wanted to do the grand thing that they had done in Lord of the Rings. And like the book itself, I've got the audiobook because I'm rereading it because I do like this story. And the audiobook itself is 9 hours in length. Yeah. So you can read, or rather you can listen to the entire audiobook in 8 or 9 hours. And that's how long this movie trilogy is going to be if he does another 2.5 hours for parts 2 and 3. That's insane.
Yeah.
Film inherently, because it's visual, can move at a faster pace because you're getting so much more information visually that the book then doesn't, you know, that the book has to describe in text. So it doesn't make sense for it to be a trilogy.
Well,
why?
It seems to have paid off. I mean, it made a ton of money over this weekend.
Well, of course it is, because all of the fanboys, all of the fans of the Lord of the Rings trilogies are going to run out and see this. And I was as excited because I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But this was so disappointing. I was so sad when I came out of the movie.
Oh, I didn't feel that strongly. Yeah. I mean, again, I think part of it is an adjustment to the tone, because clearly here he's gone in a different direction artistically.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings was this big, epic, grand, very serious themes and plot. You know, it was quite heavy in parts. You know, Frodo's, you know, the hero's journey with Frodo.
Yeah, I know.
The Hobbit is going along that kind of similar journey here, but there was a lot more laughs to be had. And again,
yeah, but I
think that's
like the laughs were because of slapstick, not because of inherent humor that comes from the story. And there's a difference.
That's a fair point. Yeah, the ogres at the beginning, I thought, were really they were very cartoony in their depiction. And, you know, again, I think the book is lighter and more playful with those characters. Yeah. You know, these are characters that have no, they're not very bright, let's just put it that way. So, you know, Bilbo has a lot of fun with them by confusing them by things that he says, and they, you know, they're like big lumbering oafs that can't understand stuff. So they do have fun with that, but it is a little bit more of a kids' movie in that regard than perhaps we were expecting.
So let's go on to the frames per second, because I'm dying to hear what you thought about that, because I know you were so you know, keen to watch this in how it should be watched.
So for those that are not aware, most standard movies play out at 24 frames per second. That means that, you know, when they're filmed, there are 24 still images that are taken every second, and then when they are played back, we get that sense of motion. Now, 24 frames per second in terms of film is about double what we can accept. If we see something filmed at 12 frames per second, we don't actually accept that it's a fluid motion. 24 frames per second is a little bit higher than that, so you get this nice smooth kind of motion. But it's a very standard way of viewing movies, and we're very used to it. This is how movies have been made for, you know, literally the last century. So what they've done here is they've doubled the frame rate, so you get 48 still images per second. And the idea behind that is that it captures so much more information. When something moves quickly across a standard movie frame, it tends to get a motion blur. With 48 frames per second, you get many more still images, so the clarity is suddenly upped. You're getting a lot more visual data thrown at your eyes, but the look of the movie changes because becomes a little bit more like television. And oftentimes television is shot at either 30 or 60 frames per second, but everything starts to look a little bit like video. And one of the problems I had with the movie, and you know, Jackson's rationale for doing this is, you know, when you're doing things in 3D, things that your eyes will accept in a two-dimensional image, like motion blur, etc., start to become a bit of a distraction visually. You're not as convinced as about the depth of the frame. And certainly I think the 48 frames per second in my mind addressed a lot of those problems. Things like when you scroll across pan across a vista, that just comes out so much more smooth and realistic. The fluidity is very nice. But I think the downside for me, at least for the first half hour of the movie, is that it's a very jarring effect. It had a horrible side effect in my mind of making everything look super synthetic. Like, there were things that weren't CG that looked CG.
You know what? All what you said, I just hated it. That's all I can say. I mean, seriously, this was such a horrible experience. I never want to see this again.
That's interesting.
In fact, I would pay to watch this in 2D and not have that burden of watching this like I'm watching a Latin soap on TV. That's how it felt. It really sounded
it's been
like
very controversial.
It was horrible.
A lot of people are having motion sickness from this.
Horrible only because it was not how we are used to, or it was just distracting, or it was unreal?
Yeah, it was all of those things, Yazdi. It felt like we were watching some home video, because it felt like home VHS in a sense.
Oh, really?
And then
they actually referred to it as the soap opera effect.
That's exactly what it felt like.
It feels like television, because there's a different cadence to some of the motion. So, for example, when somebody, you know, turns around quickly, for example, it almost looks like it's speeded up footage, but the way that they turn around or the way that they move across the screen is in real time. But so your eyes are constantly, and for me it was a problem, I think, for about the first half hour of the movie, where I found it very fatiguing. But then I kind of got over it and started to appreciate some of the extra visual information. You know, you can see Gandalf's nose hair. You know, I mean, you might not want to see Gandalf's nose hair, but it's there.
Doesn't make it a good movie.
No. But I appreciated the additional information that I was getting, like the sharpness of the image. And a lot of the problems that you get with 3D, this murkiness, for me went away. It felt very much like I was looking at a stage.
Yeah,
you know.
I'll tell you why you noticed Gandalf's nose hair. Because each scene was so damn long that there was nothing else to concentrate on.
Well, that's also true. But it was jarring. And, you know, I think a lot of people will react the way Rashmi's reacting. Jackson himself has come out in defense of it, saying that anyone under the age of 20 accepts it and thinks this is like a beautiful thing. So he's trying to make the argument that We don't like it because we are not used to it.
Yeah. Mm.
We are used to seeing movies shot a certain way, having that filmic look. And anyone that's into any kind of digital photography or recording knows that the 24 frames per second has been the goal. You know, I've got camcorders that have specific modes that shoot in 24 frames per second. That's an inherent disadvantage when you're using a small handheld camcorder for various reasons that I won't actually get into now, but it's just... To have that mode there, because our minds and eyes accept that as movie making standard, is something that, you know, that we spend a lot of money to actually achieve.
Mm.
And anyway, it's just a...
Yeah, our eyes are glazing over.
Well, I think...
Rather, you know, like during the movie.
I do think it's going to be the way forward. You know, I think...
refuse to go.
James Cameron is interested in doing this.
My point is it because it was combined with 3D? Like, would 48 frames per second on a 2D look better?
It'll be just as distracting.
Oh.
So,
yeah. Okay.
And really, there's some of the benefits of it go away in 2D. You don't really need that, but...
Okay.
Especially when you start thinking about when this stuff comes to TV, because a lot of 3D TV, what they do is they alternate images. So you're actually only getting half the information to your eyes. When we go to 48 in the home, it'll be a lot better. But anyway, it was distracting. I think it's going to be a love-hate. And the only way to really understand this whole experience is to actually go out and see it. So, you know.
That's like saying cut your head off so you know what it's like. Don't cut your head off.
I honestly think there will be walkouts because it was really hard for, you know, for half an hour or so. Okay,
please let's end this podcast.
All right.
This review. Joe.
So, comparisons to Lord of the Rings are inevitable. And this isn't anywhere near the same level of... grandeur or spectacle, and it's not trying to be. I think they're trying to stay a little bit more faithful to the tone of the books. So, you know, I didn't find the movie a dreadful bore. I just wish that the pacing had been a little quicker. I like the characters. I think there was a lot of fun in there. I wish that more had happened in my 2.5 hours. But overall, you know, if you're fans of this genre, if you're fans of Tolkien's work, I would say go see this. 6 out of 10.
Don't watch this because it might actually stop number 2 from being made. 3 out of 10.
Ouch. And Yasti, you
how many bananas?
Are you going to go see this?
Gosh, no. I mean, everything
the reviews.
The reviews have all they've been mixed. I think the defenders have been few and far between.
Mm.
But I haven't been so much into the Lord of the Rings movies even. So this seems to me. I wish that he had done 48 frames per minute in some other movie. You know, where the plot and the. Yeah.
It's a good point. Where,
you know, with a better plot, a more engaging movie.
Yeah,
right.
In a regular, in inverted commas, movie, it may have worked. The story may have been so much to keep you engaged that the frames per second wouldn't have been so distracting. But in a film where you've stretched every scene out to half an hour, when it needs to be, you know, 5 minutes, then this is going to kill you.
Yeah.
If you want to get rid of a date, take them on a first date here. Like, if a first date's going really bad, go and watch this movie.
Okay.
And pretend you love it.
But no, everything did look really CG. And that's my final point. Is one of the big problems I have with 3D remains, to this day, the very limited field of view that you get. So everything felt very confined and cramped. You know, I don't know how Ang Lee got around that and his cinematographer for The Life of Pi, because
I can't believe you even mentioned his name in the same sentence.
But that movie felt so much more expansive and open. Yeah. This is a classic 3D of, you know, I'm filming you in a box, and had that very
green screen.
Yeah, everything just looked so synthetic.
Yeah.
All right, move on. Enough said about The Hobbits.
Two more H's.
Yes.
Hyde Park on Hudson.
Yes, so Hyde Park on Hudson. Hyde Park on Hudson is the story of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, played by Bill Murray, and his wife Eleanor. And it really covers the time when they hosted the King and Queen of England for a weekend at the Roosevelt home at Hyde Park on Hudson in upstate New York, which is where the movie gets its name. The movie is directed by Roger Mitchell and stars Bill Murray and Laura Linney. And who wants to go first with their thoughts on this one? Yazdi?
So I received the screener for this movie, and I'm about halfway through seeing it, so I haven't fully seen it. So I want to withhold your judgment.
Your half assessment.
I'm going to withhold my
Where
half
did you,
judgment.
In the essence of transparency, when did you fall asleep?
So I fell asleep right at the point before the king and the king and his wife
arrived. Okay. No. Rashmi's trying to throw Yazdi under the bus here.
Yes, I did not fall asleep. Okay, just to be clear, it was a very, very long day at work, and I started watching the movie at about 10 in the night, and around 11 o'clock, my body just took over. I have nothing against the movie.
It wasn't the movie that put you to sleep.
Right.
Okay, this Correct. Wasn't like The Hobbit with Rashmi, which did put her to sleep.
Right. It didn't put me to sleep,
it
actually.
It did put you to sleep. You snoozed. There was at least 1 5-minute snooze in The Hobbit. don't deny it.
I've blocked the whole experience out of my head.
So, of what you saw...
Right.
Was it intriguing
It
to
was
you?
Intriguing. It seemed a little odd to me to see Bill Murray play this character, because he is... He's an actor of very specific... of very specific charms and very specific nuances. And I think there is something very inward and subtle and quiet about Bill Murray. And to have him play a character which was a little bit more open. I mean, he's in a wheelchair through most of the movie, but he's still larger than life. And I could sense that he was kind of struggling to inhabit that character. And also that I haven't seen the whole movie, but I sense the whole movie seen through the eyes of the Laura Linney character. And I was having a very hard time placing her in the context of all these other players. I mean, I think it's a good device that a peripheral character is, you know, through whose Yes. eyes you watch the whole movie. But even her relationship with Roosevelt and his wife, it seemed kind of unformed at that point, at least. So yeah. Again, I'm waiting to see the rest of the movie.
Well, you know what? You may not want to, because I too felt that way throughout the whole movie. But what's interesting to me is, like Hitchcock and like My Week with Marilyn, this is a really specific, and like Lincoln too, right? These are very specific moments of historical significance that people are filming.
Yeah, they're not biopics.
They're not biopics.
Right.
And I, you know, bad on me, because I don't know much about FDR, you know, the man ahead of time. And I don't feel like I was as educated as with Hitchcock when I came out of this movie. But I don't understand what I watched. I can't get my arms around it. And it felt like a very confused film that didn't really have a point of view. I felt like the storytelling, maybe because it was from the Laura Linney's mm-hmm. point of view, from that character's point of view, it felt really uneven. And despite Laura Linney and Bill Murray doing a good job acting, I felt like Bill Murray was almost a cartoon. Again, almost like Anthony Hopkins in Hitchcock. It really felt like they were playing costume time.
So I'm going to be a little bit of a counterpoint here, because at the beginning of the movie, I struggled with it. I found myself really outside the movie. It didn't pull me in. It didn't engage me. It didn't compel me to even watch the rest of it. You know, we did see this at home on a screener, and so, you know, I have to be honest about, you know, our environment being a little bit of a distraction, which wouldn't necessarily have happened in a movie theater. So I did feel like the movie was, you know, very slow to start. But I think, you know, there are key events that happen about halfway through the movie, and I don't want to make this a spoiler for anyone, but certainly that made the movie a lot more interesting. We got to know the characters in a completely different way. And I think as the movie drew towards its climax, I found myself more and more liking it more and more.
Interesting.
You know, at the beginning of the movie, I found that all the things that both of you have said to be very true. But towards the end of the movie, I started to like it a lot more.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to kind of reveal what
yeah.
what led to that. But certainly the story, I think, was it just... It was not the film that I expected at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, for me, though, Joe, I mean, and this is the bit, Yazdi, that you'll get to, the meeting of King George and FDR is a really important historical event. And yet the only scene I can remember is one with a hot dog. That's not giving anything away. But of all the movie, that's the one thing I remember, which is ridiculous.
I mean, it does tackle a lot of things, and perhaps you were hoping to see more about that particular event. But
right.
What I liked was the development of the relationship between the two of them, which, again, I think at the beginning of the movie was hard to see how that was going to go. And then, obviously, there are certain traits that FDR had about his personality that are revealed as the movie goes on. That, again, as soon as we got that, the Bill character, the Bill Murray portrayal of the character starts to make a lot more sense. Mm. You understand why he's as playful as he is being that character. And I think it was jarring because we think of FDR as this, you know, big, somber, formidable, yeah, somber tone character.
Right, and that's my criticism, that we didn't get that. We didn't get
But I think...
this sense, I don't feel like
it was deliberate, is my point, is that I think when you get to know the man and some of his character traits, some of the things that he ends up doing, and how he approaches the responsibility that he has, you understand why the initial portrayal of him as a character was perhaps a little too lighthearted, it probably felt to you at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I understood that.
So this is what it feels like. It feels like if you were to make a movie about Bill Clinton, the only thing you would concentrate on would be Monica Lewinsky.
I mean, I could see that as a criticism, mm-hmm, but that's not how I felt.
Okay, so that's how it came across to me, and literally all I got from this movie was that instead of the great president that he supposedly was, is that FDR was a philanderous, randy old man.
I mean, or that he was just flawed. He was more flawed than we think of him.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, anything more? I mean, okay, Yazdi, are you intrigued to watch the rest of the movie?
Definitely. Yeah. No, I do.
And I guess we just saw that Bill Murray got a nomination at the Golden Globes. I know we're not going to talk about awards, but interesting to me that he got a nomination.
Right.
But
yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, that may be in part a recognition of Bill Murray's past catalogue.
Yeah.
But he did a good job here. And, you know, I think the movie has problems. A lot of critics have kind of levied a whole bunch of you know, green splats on the Rotten Tomato tomatometer here, but I actually thought this was a good movie. I enjoyed this more than Lincoln, and I know it's that's actually surprising to me. I know, but Lincoln was a movie that I had a very hard time with, and this one with its, you know, lighter tone and more interesting story. It's about an event on a weekend, but you know, again, the development of the relationship between the king and the president was very important historically, and this shows how that might have come to pass. And I enjoyed that.
Okay, let's wrap this one up then. So I guess, Yazdi, do you want to give a half score or no score?
I'll be told.
You'll abstain, and no bananas either.
No bananas either.
Doesn't qualify for a banana
either. Yeah.
Score. Okay, Joe.
You know, it's weird, but no, I'm not going to go there. I was going to actually give this a 7, which would have made it movie of the week. And no, I think...
No, 6 and a half! 6 and a half! Come on!
I can't do halves. Integers. That's all it has to be. I'm going to give this... It's going to be my movie of the week. I liked it more than Hitchcock, and I liked it more than The Hobbit. 7 out of 10.
Okay, so mine is the opposite, because I liked it more than The Hobbit, but less than Hitchcock. So I'm going to give this one 4 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah, it just didn't. You know,
pointless.
I love, you know, as our listeners know, I love royal stories and I love history, but this didn't do it for me. I just didn't like the angle of the movie. I didn't get it.
The other performance here to talk about is Laura Linney, because she was terrific in this. She's always good.
She's just
always
dull.
Good. No, the character was it wasn't it. I know what you say, she's dull, but it wasn't that. It wasn't her performance that was dull. I think it was the character that was initially dull and saw the world a particular way and was very idealistic and somewhat naive. And I think, you know, that naivety made her a little boring at first. I think, again, later on in the movie we see some development there, and her transition to kind of understanding the world a little better, I thought was well done. But I'm in the minority here, you know. The tomatometer here is 38%, so this isn't a movie that's loved by many. Rashmi's with the crowd on this one.
Yep.
You're with Roger Ebert to give it 3.5 stars.
Really?
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Out of 4.
Interesting. Oh, yeah, interesting. I found myself liking it more than I ever thought I would. Mm. All right.
Okay.
Well, let's wrap up this episode. Until our next episode, I guess it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time, as always. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/moviewallahs, and do follow us on Twitter, for what it's worth, even though we don't tweet much these days. It's always good
to get... It's because we've been watching all the movies.
It's true, we should be tweeting all over the place. But looking forward to some upcoming reviews, Les Mis, Guilt Trip, Zero Dark 30, This Is 40, Promised Land. So look out, and we'll... try and publish those episodes as quick as we can. Too many movies, too little time. True more now than ever. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.